Welcome back, fellow paranormal aficionados. This week I'm drinking Down East Blueberry. So Down East is a company that I found a few years ago, and they make unfiltered craft cider, and the unfiltered part, I do prefer that in a beer or a cider. And I tried a pineapple flavor up in Long Lake a few years ago, and I think 1 or 2 years ago, and it was delicious. So I found this berry pack, and this is the flavor blueberry. I've never had it before. It's basically says, the description says, blueberries in pie, delicious. Blueberries in muffins, delicious. Blueberries in pancakes, delicious. Blueberries in cider, the trend continues. And so I am very excited to try this. And oh yeah, that is absolutely delicious. You will be hearing about the other flavors in upcoming episodes that I will try as well in the pack that I bought. So, definitely a delicious, great summer cider choice, especially with the blueberries. So, today, as you can surmise by the title, we are going to go and head up to the Ticonderoga area, Ticonderoga, Silver Bay, and Crown Point area. I figured I've discussed at least Ticonderoga in past episodes, but I really wanted to dedicate an episode to it because I did find some more things, especially in the Crown Point and Silver Lake area. So yeah, I figured we'd cover all of them, and for those out there that might want an episode specifically dedicated to it. We're going to start in Ticonderoga, specifically in Fort Ticonderoga. I did reach out to Fort Ticonderoga, to see if any of the employees or staff would want to be a guest, and that offer still stands. I just wanted to put that out there that I would love to hear firsthand accounts. So I figured we'd start with some history, just a short history of Fort Ticonderoga to set the mood for the episode. So Fort Ticonderoga is a fort located in upstate New York between Lake Champlain and Lake George. It's on the very northern tip of Lake George. There were three battles that took place there during the Revolutionary War. The fort was captured, and that took place early in the Revolutionary War on May 10th, 1775. The Green Mountain Boys were a local militia led by Ethan Allen. They were given the task of taking over the fort for the Patriots. They were joined by Colonel Benedict Arnold from Boston. At first, the Green Mountain Boys did not want to fight under Colonel Arnold, but eventually Ethan Allen and Arnold agreed to a joint command. So the Green Mountain Boys began to sneak across the river during the night. However, only around half the men had crossed the river by the time the sun rose. Rather than wait on the rest of the force to cross, Ethan Allen decided to attack. There was only one guard on duty at the south gate where they first approached. When his musket misfired, the guard ran away, and the way was open for the Patriots. They quickly entered the fort and took the 48 British soldiers by surprise. When approaching the leaders of the fort, Ethan Allen yelled out that he was taking the fort in the name of the Great Jehovah and the Continental Congress. No one was killed in the attack. The main reason for the Americans to take the fort was to get control of its cannons. The cannons were moved to Boston, where they were used to help end the siege of Boston. The fort was held by the Americans and was used to defend New York from a British attack from the north. Guarding the fort were 2,000 soldiers under the command of General Arthur St. Clair. General St. Clair had requested more soldiers from George Washington, but Washington didn't believe that the British would attack. However, in early July of 1977, the British did attack. They brought a large force of 8,000 soldiers under the command of General John Burgoyne. Burgoyne realized that early that Ticonderoga was vulnerable to an attack from the high ground of Mount Defiance. He positioned his artillery atop the mountain and began to surround the fort. When St. Clair saw that the British had large guns in place on top of Mount Defiance, he knew he had no chance to keep the fort. He ordered his men to retreat, and he gave up the fort to the British. The loss of the fort was a huge blow to the Americans. And then another attack on September 18th, a force of 500 men led by Colonel John Brown attempted to take back the fort. There were about 700 British troops garrisoned at the fort at that time. Brown was unable to take back the fort, but he did manage to rescue 118 American prisoners while capturing 293 British troops. The fort was held by the British for the rest of the war, but held little significance. It was abandoned by the British after the surrender at Yorktown in 1781. So, a few interesting facts about Fort Ticonderoga. It was strategically important during the French and Indian War. General St. Clair was accused by some of taking bribes to give up the fort to the British, but was exonerated in a court-martial trial. The Green Mountain Boys did not like Colonel Benedict Arnold. It is said that arguments broke out to the point where they even drew their weapons on him. It was reported that when the British retook the fort, King George III was so excited he announced to the Queen, "I have beat them. I have beat all the Americans." And lastly, Benedict Arnold later became a traitor to the Continental Army when he went over to the British. So next, I wanted to just start off by mentioning that the show Ghost Hunters, the infamous show Ghost Hunters, did a Fort Ticonderoga episode, and it is season 6, episode 2. You can watch the entire episode on Dailymotion, and I will post it on our site, on our Facebook page, on our social media, so everybody can have access to it. I'm pretty sure I've watched it in the past. But they investigated the historic and reportedly eerie Fort Ticonderoga. The dead of three different nations allegedly haunt the French-built 18th century fort located in upstate New York. The location has proven to play pivotal roles in both the French and Indian War as well as the American Revolution, leaving thousands dead in its shadows. So I actually wanted to start with playing a short clip from that episode. So it's just the team talking about where they're going and then being introduced to one of the staff members and the staff member kind of giving them a little insight about the fort. So I thought that was a great way to kick off this episode. So I invite you to sit back, relax, and enjoy.
I have a cool case. I think Grant's gonna regret not being here. Fort Ticonderoga.
Oh, upstate New York.
Yeah, I'm psyched about this one. It was built back in 1755 by the French army. There's been several battles here. It led to thousands of deaths, and they have a bunch of different locations for us to check out inside and outside of the fort.
What kind of activity have they had on
there? They've seen apparitions of a soldier in a red coat, floating balls of light, footsteps, voices spoken in French. They've also heard the sounds of drums and bagpipes, and they've heard like horses, like they're stomping hooves and breathing and just a whole list of things.
Now, there's been a lot of reports of this place being haunted for as long as I can remember. Being from upstate New York, I have family that has property down on Lake George, and this is pretty close to that area.
Yeah.
All right, okay. It's
going
to be a good one.
Sounds good. Thanks,
Chris.
Guys.
Chris just filled Jason and I in on all the information for Fort Ticonderoga. A lot of activity, a great location.
I was there when I was a kid, and there's been a lot of claims, and I can remember the claims going back, you know, 10, 20 years ago. It's a shame that Grant won't be able to join us, but as Taps being a big family, you know, we pick up the slack and we move on, we make it happen.
All right, now, are people scared, the people that are working there, or is it the people coming in, visiting the place?
Both the visitors and the employees are frightened. They don't understand what's going on, and they're just really hoping we can help figure it out and let them know if there's anything there that they should be fearful of.
Gotcha.
Hey, Britt, happy to have you here helping out.
Since Grant's not here, and I think this is going to be a good case.
Yeah, I think so too, bro. Thanks for having me out. I appreciate it.
All right, guys, but we're not too far from there, so let's get over and check this place out, figure out what's happening.
It's beautiful.
This is so
cool. Hey, Chris.
Hey there.
I'm Jason.
Nice to meet you.
Steve, how's it going?
How you doing?
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, team. Welcome to Fort Ticonderoga. We're so pleased you're able to come up and give us some advice on what's going on here.
Can you give us some of the history here?
Yeah, the fort played a pretty important role in both the French and Indian War and American Revolution. In 1758, the British Army, numbering about 17,000 soldiers, came up Lake George to try to force the French out of the fort, push them back into Canada. The French Army here only had about 3,600 troops. At the end of the day, the British Army had actually been defeated. A stunning defeat. The Americans occupy the fort until the summer of 1777, when a British invasion force advances south down Lake Champlain out of Canada, forcing the American garrison here to evacuate across the bridge over into Vermont and ultimately head south. A lot of people came through here, a lot of people died.
Okay, so we hear there's a lot of paranormal activity that goes on here.
We have a lot of reports of activity spanning many decades. The buildings here around us are the barracks buildings, the soldiers' barracks building. In front of us and behind you is the officers' barracks building. One morning, a woman was in here, one of our employees, cleaning up.
As I walked into the courtyard, I kept hearing like a tapping noise, like glass tapping, and I turned around and I looked up at the upper floor, which is the attic of the museum, and there was a male figure. It was just the outline of a figure with a very large hat, a wardrobe that was from the 18th century, looking at me through the window. So, yeah, it totally freaked me out.
So that building over there?
Yeah, it's the attic window. It'd be the window on the left, actually.
Okay, so where to now?
Well, let's head up to the officer's barracks.
Wow. Amazing collection. So what kind of things go on down here?
Well, we are standing right now in the officer's barracks. Mm-hmm. One of our uniformed interpreters caught a glimpse of what he described as a person wearing French-style military coat. So he turned over, extending his hand to greet the person and talk with him. And he said that when he turned, nobody there. Now, through that door, there's a corridor that goes into a casemate to that end.
Yeah.
On other occasions, staff that have worked in this room have reported hearing the sounds of footsteps on the floor above them.
You can hear footsteps walking upstairs. Most everybody here has heard this. So someone will go up the stairway on one end of the building, and someone will go up the stairway on the other end of the building, and no one's up there.
All right, so what kind of stuff goes on up there?
Well, we're in the upper floor of the soldiers' barracks right now. Our normal closing procedure is a couple of our museum staff come up a set of stairs on either end of the building and cross in the middle to make sure there's no visitors. Mm-hmm. One time when the museum staff had come up the steps, they both apparently saw what they described as a red-coated figure, sort of standing in the middle here. Well, when they both get near the center here, they say, did that guy go by you? And he said, no, it didn't go by me, and didn't go this way. Apparently, the person was just gone.
Anything else in this area?
Not up here. Why don't we head down to the floor below us?
All right, after you.
Great. Over the years, a number of our employees have described seeing what they describe as balls of light moving around. On one occasion, a couple of our staff reported seeing a ball of light come out of the fireplace right behind you, Tango. Go between these two cases and then on up the steps to the next floor. Similar balls of light have been seen in two other rooms in this building right behind us.
Well, we went up into the second floor of the South Barracks, opened a door, and there was a little ball of light. It was just hovering overhead. A co-worker of mine came around the corner, and I pointed it out to him, and we looked at it, and he said to me, I wonder what that is. With that, it made a turn around the room and went down an air vent register. And that was all we saw of it.
They're seeing this with their eyes, not cameras.
They're seeing it with their eyes.
Yeah. All right, cool. Okay, so what goes on in here?
Well, now we're in the ground floor of the soldiers' barracks. A couple of years ago, one of our staff persons was in here doing some just basic morning cleaning.
It was 9 o'clock. I was dusting a case off, and I heard footsteps coming up the courtyard. And I turned around to look to say good morning, and all I saw was, it looked to me like smoke. Gray, dark gray, and it just floated in and went right through the wall.
It's beautiful. All right, so what goes on out here?
Well, the area that we're standing in right now is an area that we know that American officers during the Revolution were buried. Out here, people have heard the sounds of sort of hoofbeats, like there's horses moving around. And we don't have any horses on the property. A couple of people reported seeing what they described as sort of a figure on horseback, sort of up near the road. Another person described one evening seeing a shadowy figure moving around from sort of tree to tree.
Are you talking at ground level or something that's going from the canopy?
Apparently at ground level, sort of a human form moving around.
Got a lot of stuff.
Yeah, we
do. A lot of stuff.
All right, so what we're going to do from here is we're going to go talk with the rest of the crew, start setting up the equipment, and see what we can catch. We got a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah. Well, I wish you the best of luck.
Thanks, man.
All right.
All right, come on, let's get out of here.
So I hope you enjoyed that little clip from the episode. I am going to actually go back and now that I've watched that beginning, because I haven't seen it in a while, I'm curious what they caught. So I will definitely post that link on our social media so you can check it out also and see. And please, if you've been to Ticonderoga or had any experiences yourself, please let me know. I would love to tell your stories. Few more things related to Ticonderoga. I found something called Haunted Tales at Ty, T-I. This was back in 2014, but I did find some in my research, some indication that it happened more than once. I believe it's put on by someone named Sue Cameron, and the description says, it's said that haunted places are usually associated with the death of an occupant or a strong connection between someone deceased and the property. Many different experiences are connected with haunted buildings, items disappearing and reappearing, seeing strange shadows and smelling unfamiliar fragrances, unexplained noises, and lights turning on and off for a few. Many supposedly haunting buildings are quite old and have experienced a great deal of history throughout the years. So specifically, Fort Ticonderoga, it could be said to have all the right history to cause spirits to reside there. The fort's history of military conflicts and death from the war and disease would certainly seem to have created the right environment. So in the spirit of maybe it is haunted, once a year the fort opens in the evening for garrison ghost tours. Long before the fort's restoration was begun, many visitors reported having unexplained experiences. Some reported the spirit of a young Indian girl could be seen walking around the walls of the fort. This particular spirit is reported to have jumped from one of the high walls and committed suicide in the 1750s, rather than submit to the demands of a man she did not love. There is a belief that some of the soldiers from the Revolution and other wars walk its halls and walls and inhabit one of its buildings. Serving at the fort over the course of its military history from 1755 to 1777 were tens of thousands of soldiers. Disease was the number one killer, not battle injuries. Several years ago, the TV show Ghost Hunters filmed an episode at the fort. In different parts of the fort, they discovered evidence of paranormal activity. Their recording devices, as well as their own ears and eyes, picked up voices, doors creaking, benches rocking, and unexplained thumping. Some of the team members had personal experiences shared with others that evening as well. There were also some noises that they thought were unexplainable, for which they did find normal causes. She suggests that you watch the episode, which I'll make sure all of you have access to that. And then she goes on to discuss someone called the Mistress of the Fort. The spirit of Nancy Coates, who was a mistress of General Anthony Wayne, or Mad Anthony, is also believed to haunt the fort. She drowned herself in Lake Champlain upon learning Wayne had supposedly left her for another woman. Her spirit has been seen on the pathways of the fort, waiting at the gate, and also her body has been reported floating on the water of the lake. Her supposed voice has been heard sobbing around the fort as well. Several sightings of soldiers in upper windows of the barracks have been reported. Additionally, a ghost by the name of Sarah Pell, of the family that began restoring the fort in the earliest 20th century, has been seen looking out over the King's Garden from a window above in the pavilion. Other individuals over the years have reported red glowing orbs floating throughout several different rooms at the fort. The garrison ghost tours, I wanted to make sure I mentioned those. So it says, come see for yourself at one of the next two garrison ghost tours taking place on October 10th and 24th, and they begin promptly at 8 p.m. You're asked to be on site by 7:45, with the site opening for the evening tour at 7:30. The tours take approximately an hour and 30 minutes, and time probably depends on how many spirits are encountered, it says. You must make advanced reservations and tours because they take place, rain or shine. So garrison ghost tours, that was something that I wanted to make sure I mentioned. I'm not sure if the fort still does it because of COVID, the pandemic, but hopefully they do, because that sounds really, really interesting. And then the other thing that I found that they did back in 2021, so pretty recently, was they did around the campfire. So sitting around a campfire in the dark and hearing ghost stories about Southern Lake Champlain is coming up at the Hancock House here in Ticonderoga. Dress warmly, Program presenter Diane O'Connor said, and you might be thrilled and scared by what you hear. The Ticonderoga Historical Society will celebrate the Halloween season with a free program entitled Haunted Hancock, Ghostly Tales of Champlain, outside the Hancock House, which was located in 6 Moses Circle in Ticonderoga. The program will be held around a campfire. Attendees should bring their own lawn chairs, and reservations are strongly encouraged as this program is one of the museum's most popular. So, the Hancock House is a regional institution dedicated to preserving and interpreting the history of the Adirondacks and Lake Champlain regions. Our area is rich in history, and the supernatural is woven throughout that history in a powerful way, O'Connor said in a release. The evening's tales will include local spirits of soldiers, trappers, witches, and otherworldly beings. She said that much of the Adirondacks, particularly the Lake Champlain and Lake Champlain, I keep thinking about Champagne apparently, and Lake George region is marked by war. In the 1700s, as two great nations battled for control of the area, the Adirondacks were the scene of tremendous violence. Sorry. The Battle of Lake George, the surrender of Fort William Henry, the British retreat to Fort Edward, and a very bloody strategic battle fought right here in our own backyards. O'Connor said that as a director of a historic museum, she is often approached by visitors who wish to share their supernatural experiences. Several years ago, someone told me a story about walking the uppermost part of Lachute River Portage Trail at night and seeing pinpoints of light moving independently through the trees and underbrush. They were adamant that these lights could not have been caused by reflection or insects or any other means. About a year later, another individual related to me that many years ago they had car trouble very late at night while driving into town along the street parallel to the portage. They pulled off the road and got out, intending to walk home. As they got out of their car, they heard noises that sounded like men marching and heard voices calling out what seemed to be military commands. There was no earthly presence to account for what they had heard. The portage was the route followed by the British Army as it marched on Fort Ticonderoga in 1758. O'Connor said she plans to speak of specters from Crown Point, Mineville, Elizabethtown, Westport, Ticonderoga, Lake Placid, Lake George, and other regional locations and how their stories have a basis in local history. Fort Ticonderoga itself has numerous ghost stories, including a spectral horseman who rides up on an invisible horse throwing puffs of dust, and Sir William Johnson sitting in a chair he once owned. We will be taking a look at the darker side of the Adirondacks and Lake Champlain region, O'Connor said. It's an evening of history-based ghost stories and all that goes bump in the night. So, Haunted History, T-I as in Ticonderoga, and that was at the Hancock House. So, I definitely recommend reaching out to the Ticonderoga Historical Society to see if they're doing this again, the Campfire Haunted History event. That sounds chock full of history and lore, so that's really, really fascinating. Another thing I wanted to mention that I found in the New York Times back on July 2nd, 1922, an article was published that was entitled Fort Ticonderoga's International Ghost Story. And I know I've talked about this story in previous episodes, but I wanted to make sure I told it again. And there's actually a copy of the actual 1922 publication of the New York Times, looking at the article. So I'll definitely post that on our social media, because I think that it's really fascinating to see it. And it talks about Duncan Campbell's ghost. So I figured we'd go over that now. So the article's by John Walker Harrington. Thrills of one of the most remarkable international ghost stories known to psychic fame chill the marrow of the visitors to old Fort Ticonderoga who look upon that fane of American patriotism on the 4th of July. There is always some old resident of the vicinage who is willing to start the tale of the Campbell ghost just as soon as he can draw attention to the relics of the Black Watch. This is not Black Witch, but the name of the 42nd Regiment of the foot of British Army, which came to this country from the highlands of Scotland to fight the French and later camped at the upper part of the island of Manhattan when the British had occupied the city of New York in the War of the Revolution. Up at Old Fort Ty, one may see buttons and belts and all manner of reminders of that gallant old command, and not far away between Hudson Falls and Fort Edward lies in the Union Cemetery the body of that major of the historic regiment, Duncan Campbell of Inverawe, to whom appeared the specter to tell him of his death and in a foreign land. On the anniversary of the fall of the ill-starred officer, July 8th, relatives and often citizens of the neighboring towns gather at the worn slab which marks his resting place. This article is, the paper is a little bit degraded, so some of the words are actually kind of missing, so I apologize if I'm stumbling. Brother officers who died with him are entombed in Westminster Abbey, but on account of the curse of Inverawe, no doubt the clan has never seen to it that the body of Duncan Campbell was taken back to his own country. If Sir Arthur Conan Doyle returns to storytelling again, he might find both the elements of the psychic and the romantic in the legend of the old ghost room, for there is a mystery based on well-authenticated facts which has been puzzling historians for many decades. How did the ghost know? If Sir Arthur should take such a theme as this, he would be treading in the path of Robert Louis Stevenson in The Master of Ballantrae. It will be recalled by all Stevenson devotees that the dashing Ballantrae followed many fortunes and flags, including the Jolly Roger, and finally got to the New World on a low and rakish craft. He gave up piracy for the enterprise of carrying on a contraband trade with the French, with whom his country was at war. Making his headquarters at Albany, he came in touch with stirring scenes and incidents and witnessed the bringing in of the Indian captives. About the time that the Master of Inverawe was marching against Montcalm, the Master of Ballantrae was shown engaged in a nefarious calling. Stevenson aptly described the neighborhood of Ticonderoga and later brings the Laird of Ballantrae back to the vicinity to unearth treasure. There he buries him with a suitable inscription on the headstone, which, although less filled with a suggestion of service than that of the Campbell chieftain of this tale, conveys an idea of weird adventure and of pending doom. To sense the heart of the tale, we should start with the very beginning of the Black Watch. As early as 1667, it came into being by command of Charles II of England, who designated that trusty companies should be gathered to watch upon the braes. Keeping order in the Highlands of Scotland those days was no easy task, and the companies of the Black Watch had to always be on alert for even a small signs of trouble, that they might see without being seen. That they were at first clad in black tartans. From this circumstance, members of the Black Watch got the name, which has clung to their organization even to this day. The regiment was practically wiped out 14 times during the World War, but it is the Black Watch, just as it was centuries ago. All the same, sorry, the words are very scratchy in certain parts. During the reign of George II, the command was thoroughly recognized, and in 1740 received the title of the 42nd Regiment of Foot, although it was also referred to as Highlanders or Lord Murray's Highlanders, or mercifully as the Highland Regiment. His Majesty had specified that those who belonged to should be of full height, well-proportioned, and handsome in appearance. Inasmuch as there was stringent rules against the private bearing of arms because of so many bloody feuds, young Scottish gentlemen were eager to enlist. Many a young laird, accompanied by his servant, also a soldier, was in the ranks of the Black Watch and glad of the good fortune which brought him there. So then we move on to Duncan Campbell's ghost in the article. In his youth, Duncan Campbell, master of the old estate of Inverawe, joined the Black Watch and was rapidly promoted until he became its major. A tall, dark man with massive shoulders and lordly bearing, he was reputed to be one of the handsomest of the lairds of the Western Highlands. His lands upon the Little River Awe were under the lee of the lofty mountain Ben Crucan, which by which his clansmen swore when they pledged their word. A rambling old castle was the home of the Campbells, which stands to this day as much as it was when the Campbell of Black Watch was dwelling there. The major was sitting one evening in his hall when he heard a loud rapping at his door, so insistent that he did not wait for a servant to answer it, but went himself to the portal. There rushed into his presence a man whose tartan was stained with blood, a wild-eyed fugitive with disheveled locks and bonnetless. "I have just killed a man and I am being pursued," gasped the intruder. "For God's sake, hide me. Swear on your dirk not to give me up." On the impulse of the moment, Campbell drew his dirk, D-I-R-K, I don't know what that is, and gave the solemn pledge and hid the man in the recesses of the cellar. Hardly had he concealed the criminal than the searching party came thundering up and told him that a man had just killed the laird's cousin, Donald Campbell, and asked if he had seen anything of the murderer. The major professed ignorance of the whereabouts of the fugitive, and as such a thing as sheltering the slayer of one of his own clan never occurred to the posse, it raised the hue and cry in other directions. After the pursuers had gone, Campbell was overwhelmed with remorse. The legend runs that as he lay on his couch in the large apartment known to this day as the Ghost Room, there appeared to him the astral figure of Donald Campbell, from which came a sepulchral voice saying, "Inveraw, Inveraw, blood has been shed, shield not the murderer." The next morning, Campbell went to the assassin and told him of the ghost. "But man," said the fugitive, "that may all be, but you promised to shelter me. You have sworn it on your dirk." "I don't know what a dirk is." Sword, maybe? This was an unanswerable argument, so Campbell took the man at night and hid him in a secret cave of Ben Crushan. This was also sacrilege in a way, as the lofty peak was regarded as sacred to the clan. That night there stood before the laird the same ghostly visitant, looking at him with reproachful eyes and repeating the same command against protecting the slayer. When Campbell went to the cave the next morning, he found that the fugitive had made his escape. For the third time, the specter of Donald appeared to him that night. "Farewell, farewell," it said, "till we meet at Ticonderoga." The strange name, which the laird had never heard, lingered in his memory for years. As a matter of fact, probably nobody, or at least few persons, on the other side of the Atlantic had heard the name or anything like it. What we now call Fort Ticonderoga was then known as Fort Carillion and was an outpost on the borders of Canada or New France. The Indians called that point of land between Lake George and Champlain by the name Ticonderoga, but at that time even few Americans would have recognized the peculiar title, Ticonderoga, often mused by the major. Where can that be? The vision, however, was as plain to him as was the apparition which appeared to the Roman general and whispered, "I will meet you at Philippi." Meanwhile, the whirligig of world of politics was playing with the fate of the Laird of Inveraw. In May 1756, war was declared between Great Britain and France and the British plan to attack the French possessions in the New World. Several regiments were dispatched to New York, and among them the Black Watch or 42nd Highlanders. In conversation with a brother officer in Major Campbell, learned that it was proposed to attack Louisburg, Crown Point, and Ticonderoga. From that day, Duncan Campbell regarded himself as marked for a speedy death. His brother officers had long known the words of the ghost, and they tried to console him as best they could. They informed him that they did not in any way blame him for following out his oath as a man of honor and sought to convince him that the specter was a figment of his imagination. "But Ticonderoga, man, Ticonderoga," was the reply of Campbell. "You cannot explain it away. I have never heard that name until a few weeks ago." The historians have recorded in detail the expedition up the Hudson Valley and down Lake George or Horicon to the attack of the ancient stronghold. A formidable fortification it was, too, as may be seen since its restoration for S.H.P. Pell under the direction of Alfred C. Bossum, a New York City architect, for it had all elements of a traditional defensive works. With what its ravelins and its half moons and its glassies it was, okay, I don't know anything in that sentence, well nigh I'm impregnable. The expedition against it consisted of more than 6,000 regular British soldiers and 9,000 provincials, a huge fleet of bateaux, whaleboats, and many flat barges for the artillery started from Lake George Village and wound among the green inlets of Horicon. There were perfect days in July, and despite the dangers that surrounded them, the soldiers were in a gay mood, all except for one tall and gloomy figure, Major Duncan Campbell of the Black Watch, brooding over his fate. Oh my gosh, he was the one person in a bad mood. Out of a mistaken kindness of heart, some of his brother officers still tried to cajole him out of his forebodings. They told him, even when they were near the French stronghold, that it was not Ticonderoga, but Fort George. "You've deceived me," he said on the fateful morning of July 8th, 1768. "I have seen him. This is Ticonderoga. I shall die today." Never in all history was a more bungling attack delivered against the position of an enemy than that which was directed by Colonel Abercrombie, the British commander. Lord Howe, the real head of the expedition, had been killed on July 5th by a chance shot from a foe concealed. Abercrombie did not make up his mind what to do until the 8th, and in the meantime, the French under Montcalm had made their position triply secure by throwing up huge fortifications of forest trees several hundred yards from the walls of the fort, which proved an outer defense, so swept at various angles by artillery and musketry fire, that the British force would have been inadequate even under better conditions. Without even waiting for the cannon, which had not come up, the British attacked and were repulsed with great slaughter. The Black Watch, of whom 1,000 were present, threw themselves into the battle with heroism. They charged the glacis and the leafy defenses with their naked broadswords, and many of them were bayoneted to death as they surmounted the defenses. Nearly half of the command, including 25 officers, were killed. The Black Watch soldiers were better targets than they were at first, for they had adopted the redcoats, although they still had dark tartans. Major Campbell's fate was not sealed in full that day, for although he was wounded by a slug from artillery in his right arm, the injury was not reported as serious. The French Canadians, however, had used old metal, broken glass, and such substances in loading their artillery, and there were many cases of blood poisoning with fatal results. Both the major and his son, John Campbell, might have been saved in these days of antiseptic surgery, but gangrene destroyed them both. The doom pronounced upon the Lord of Inverawe did not fall until 9 days later, when the unfortunate officer breathed his last. It happened that the major had relatives by the name of Gilchrist at Fort Edward, at whose home he died. His body was interred in their family plot in the local graveyard, and in 1871 was removed to its present resting place. The original headstone, still extant, bears the following inscription: "Here lies the body of Duncan Campbell of Inverawe, Esk Major of the Old Highland Regiment, aged 55 years, who died on the 17th of July, 1758, of wounds received in the attack upon the retrenchments of Ticonderoga or Carillion on July 8th, 1758. The Campbell estate was left to the daughter of the major, and she married a relative who had been left as her guardian and overseer of the property as well. Students of history will remember that after the defeat of 1758, the British returned the following year under General Amherst and captured the fort in an easy victory. The Black Watch took part in the fight. It was subsequently sent to the West Indies. The regiment came to this continent for the War of the American Revolution and then returned to the Highlands to be again summoned in other wars in the service of the Crown. Ticonderoga, long held by a handful of invalid British soldiers, was finally taken by Ethan Allen. It fell into disrepair and was finally restored as a fane of American patriotism as it is to this day. Now that the attention of the world is turned to things of the spirit land, the question often arises, how did the word Ticonderoga come to the brain of Duncan Campbell? Even admitting that the Wraith of Inverawe was a creation of disordered fancy, whence the strange and outlandish Indian syllables were accepted by the Laird as his cachet of destiny. So that was an interesting article. Lots of words we don't use today anymore. but interesting nonetheless. And I actually think it was the most interesting telling of that, of Duncan Campbell's ghost story, that I've read on the episode. I know I did it in an Adirondack episode, I believe, and I think I've told it twice at this point in previous episodes. I can't remember, but I will definitely post it. It's really cool to see the original newspaper article, so definitely look forward to that. And then, yeah, I wanted to round out Ticonderoga area, specifically this has to do with Fort Ticonderoga again, I believe, by a story from David Pitkin's book Ghosts of the Northeast entitled Carillion. So this one says, they headed back to their cars on a moonlit September night. Sally and her daughter in colonial dresses were ending a reenactment weekend at Fort Ticonderoga, New York. Her husband was conversing on the old fort's north bastion for a moment, intending to follow them shortly. Suddenly, a tall man with a rifle and fixed bayonet blocked the woman's path. He demanded the watchword. Sally smiled and said, good job. I thought we were done for the weekend, but you did that real well. The man disappeared. Later on the drive home, she told her husband about the incident, but all the uniformed reenactors were still in the Place d'Armes inside the fort, he said. A ghostly sentinel from the Revolution still on guard after over 200 years? It's entirely possible, said Drum Major Mike Edson, a staff member who leads the fort's crack, fife, and drum corps. He worked at the fort for over 26 years and notes that in recent years he has heard stories of apparitions in that north parking lot. James Fenimore Cooper's author's son James wrote of a ghost experience there in 1910. He saw a ghostly pair in the ruined fort, a British officer and an Indian maiden who threw herself to her death below the walls. The fort, just a ruin at that time, was not the reconstructed tourist attraction of today. I've never heard that one, Mike said. The most common experience among our staff is hearing footsteps on the third floor in the mornings. When our security people enter the second floor of the Southwest Barracks, they hear heavy walking that makes the floorboards creak. After the Revolution, the unused fort slowly disintegrated. In 1908, Stephen Pell dedicated his fortune to restoring it to its former glory as a historical site that all Americans could visit. Apparently, the ghosts had never left. The staff and reenactors who annually encamp on the fort's outlying grounds often had heard the ghostly wail of distant bagpipes, though the piper is never found. In the 1980s, Roger worked for the fort's bakery. His fluency in French made him valuable to French-speaking visitors. At his post one evening, he heard a voice behind him. Well, I have burned the rolls once more. I hope the captain will not be angry. It was a dialect that hadn't been used in over 200 years. When he whirled to confront the speaker, he saw nobody. About a month later, in the same room, he heard a Scots sergeant declaring that the rum ration had been watered down again, a remark sure to rankle the troops in the lonely mountain outpost. In one barracks, there is a weapons display and table for visitors. A doorway leads to a video room where tourists can see a short presentation on the fort's history. John, a summer guide escorted visitors into the room and delivered his regular spiel for tourists. A man dressed in gray and blue of the French army was standing in the doorway. John ignored him. Reenactors sometimes lurked around the fort on weekdays. Later, he remembered that no reenactors were present that week. Sharon, another of the guides, said, I saw that guy too. Boy, am I glad you saw him. A fort historian told him that archaeologists had found the remains of a French soldier buried in that barracks wall when reconstruction started almost a century before. Was that soldat français, French soldier, still seeking to inform of his ignoble burial? In 1997, a demi-lune, the rounded outer fortification, collapsed. As they cleared the rubble, the historians were able to examine the construction materials of 250 years ago. Soil samples assessed the environmental condition before the walls were erected. It was all very professional work done by historians and archaeologists, but no professional training could explain the glowing balls. It's as if the collapse released some ancient energy, Mike Edson told me. These 2-inch luminous balls now move throughout the second floor barracks and museum from time to time. Maintenance men most often notice these energies. What they are and what propels them, we don't know. No one has ever seen anything like them in 100 years since the fort has been rebuilt. Fort Ticonderoga, built to guard the passage between the lakes, may today serve as a passageway between the worlds of those who live and those who used to. So that is an excellent way to round out the Ticonderoga area and Fort Ticonderoga area. Now, I wanted to move on to a second fort. I grew up around here. I've never even heard of this, so I thought this was a really cool thing I found in my research. This is from an article in the Press Republican from October in 2021, and the title of the article says, Crown Point Fort to Host Ghost Tours. So I didn't know anything about the Crown Point State Historic Site. And there's a photo of it, and it's definitely this crazy old-looking fort. So, spooky stories surrounding the 18th century French and British forts at the Crown Point State Historic Site are about to come to life. The ghostly tours will feature shadowy figures in the barracks, killings by deranged lovers, torturous drownings, and sea monster sightings, said the fort's Chris Jarrett. Haunted history at the forts, so it's called Haunted Histories at the forts, is a 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. and it took place on 2 dates in October. It was free admission, all ages are welcome, and cider and donuts were provided. It said, bring your flashlights, meet us outside the museum, and follow our storyteller around the grounds as they tell the bone-chilling tales of Crown Point. People can enjoy the cool autumn air as they learn about the sordid details of a past that will make their skin crawl and their minds wander. Historic site manager Lisa Pollet said she came up with the idea while hearing strange tales about the site. This started as an idea born of the stories told to me by the staff here at the site, as well as reenactors that have spent many nights here. More than one person has reported hearing horses galloping or seeing apparitions. The location contains the two French and Indian War era military forts and hosted a smallpox hospital in June of 1776 during the epidemic. I don't necessarily believe in ghosts, but I don't not believe in them either, she said. Delving through research in the office and conversations where the state archaeologists also reveal that there has never ever been any human remains found here, despite the fact that we have death records as well as the evidence of the smallpox hospital. And apropos of current epidemic issues, the hospital was set up here at Crown Point following the second surge of the epidemic following the siege on Quebec. At the time, we had a local student teacher, Tanner Whalen, working with us, and he had a further stories of the strange and unexplained in the area, and the event came to life. So the Haunted Forts events was held last in 2019, she said, and it expanded this year, or in 2021 when the article was written. I'm copying the stories that we've told here, and then this year we'll have additional stories, and our guides will be costumed interpreters, these waylaid souls, centuries of unrest, returning to the forts to tell tales of the mysterious and unexplained that haunt our shorelines and mountains. We're just about at twilight and light luminaria to line the pathways. She said she often hears odd noises around the forts while working late in her office as well. I was never bothered by it until we held the event. Being in the parade ground amongst the flashlit beams and shadows is quite magical and eerie. Our visitors really enjoyed the opportunity to explore the parade grounds and barracks at night, and I'm happy to report that everyone made it out alive. So I just thought that was so cool that Crown Point also, there's a fort there. So if you want to reach out to Crown Point State Historic Site and see if they do their ghost tours, I'm assuming if it happened last year, it'll happen again this year. So that's a really cool thing to know about. And to see the fort by night is awesome. So then I wanted to move over to Silver Bay to kind of round out the episode. I just found some personal ghost stories from Silver Bay that I wanted to read. So going down the western side of the Lake George and closer to Crown Point area. So this is submitted by Will. I go there every summer, and every summer it gets weirder and weirder. I'm thinking about a full-scale investigation. It's a very fun vacation spot, but something about Payne Hall, P-A-I-N-E, seems off. I'll report back in the summer when I go there. The next one is submitted by Cece. I just got home from staying at Silver Bay YMCA campgrounds, and I was in the Girl Scouts there. One of the older girls told me a ghost story about Payne Hall, which is where we were staying, and she said stuff like doors slam and whispers and footsteps are heard, especially on the second floor. Well, I didn't believe her until last night when me and my roommate stayed up until around 4 a.m., and sure enough, we could hear footsteps in the hallway outside of us, and no one else was awake. And I know that for a fact. There is definitely something strange going on at Payne Hall at Silver Bay Campgrounds. I don't know Silver Bay Campgrounds offhand, so that's another cool thing to discover. The next one submitted by Abby. When I went to Silver Bay in New York, me and my friend Ashley were sleeping, and she got the big bed and I got the small bed. And in the middle of the night, her bed moved from being straight to sideways, touching mine while she was sleeping on it. She woke me up, and when I woke up, her face was beet red, trying to move the bed back in place. Later that day, you could still hear screams and moans. My other friend woke up standing on her bed. That's not normal, is it? I love that that ends on a question. The next one is submitted by Stephanie. My 12-year-old sister just came home early from the YMCA camp in Silver Bay due to the fact that when she was laying in bed one night, she looked over to her friend's bed right next to her and saw a corpse laying underneath the bed staring at her. Oh my god, that's disgusting. I was hoping I could find a story about this corpse, but no luck. I was wondering if anyone else has seen this corpse. Don't say corpse so much. And then lastly, one short but sweet submitted by Tony. There's known to be shouts and a faint image of an Indian that died on a cliff right above where the images and noises are heard and seen. I don't think you want to run into this ghost. So that's just a little bit from Silver Bay and pretty much all the Silver Bay YMCA area and campground, which is creepy. And then I just wanted to mention a book that I found an event that I found. This was back in 2016. I found it on the AdirondackAlmanac.com, but it was entitled Haunted Happenings in Ticonderoga and Crown Point. So it looks like Ticonderoga and Crown Point are conjuring up all the ghosts in their cupboard this weekend with a Halloween extravaganza between the likes of Penfield Museum's Haunted Homestead and the nearby Fort Ticonderoga's Maze by Moonlight. So according to the Penfield Homestead Museum Vice President Sue Ross, this is the seventh year the museum has brought out the ghouls and goblins. With the assistance of Retro Film Studios' Jim Crawley, the homestead is arranged differently each year, with each room highlighting assorted fright effects. A guide leads participants through the museums in small groups, and an outside bonfire and warm beverages at the nearby snack shack help take out any chill left by any zombies and vampires. So I just wanted to mention those. And then that's actually it. Last but not least, just this little event that I found, Haunted Happening. So the Penfield Museum's Haunted Homestead, and then the Fort Ticonderoga's Maze by Moonlight. So yeah, I've actually learned a lot in this episode. I thought because I had told the stories prior, I knew everything there was to know about this Northern Lake George area, especially the fort. So keep an eye out for the newspaper article, the link to the full episode of Ghost Hunters, season 6, episode 2 it was. And then, I just wanted to make sure that I shouted out the websites that I got my information from. The first one, funny enough, is Ducksters.com. The second one was imdb.com, just letting me know that the episode of The Ghost Hunters was season 6, episode 2. Then we have dailymotion.com, and that's where you can see the full episode of The Ghost Hunters. lakechamplainregion.com, and by Sue Cameron. Pressrepublican.com, And that is by Lore McKinstry. And the Times, the New York Times article from 1922. ThePressRepublican.com by Lore McKinstry also about the Crown Point. And GhostsOfAmerica.com. And last but not least, AdirondackAlmanac.com. So on that haunted historical note, I just wanted to again reiterate, if anybody out there has personal stories from Ticonderoga, please, anybody has worked there, please let me know. I would love to have some guests on that have spent time there and had some experiences, or have anything else they want to contribute to this conversation. So yeah, on that note, a big cheers, and as always, happy haunting.